You're listening to the official Euro 2020 podcast in association with Qatar Airways.
Now it's Schick from range! Oh, it is a thrilling goal! It is one of the great Euro goals! It's Patrick Schick! Unbelievable! To make it 2-0!
Have we already seen the goal of Euro 2020, Chris?
Quite possibly. We'll have the reaction to Schick's stunner. Plus, Slovakia win and Sweden hold Spain.
We'll hear from Hugo Lloris ahead of that big match between France and Germany. And Cristiano Ronaldo talks about breaking Euro records.
We'll also be buzzing around our host cities at this unique UEFA Euro 2020.
Welcome to the show, sponsored by Qatar Airways. I'm Rob Daly, and I'm with my co-host, Chris Parrott. Chris, hello. Another intriguing day.
Certainly has been, and it's literally just finished. The players are still walking off the pitch in Seville, and Robin Olsen is being hugged, and the Sweden fans are celebrating in the stands after an excellent 0-0 draw for them. They held on at the end, and earlier today we saw the Czech Republic pick up a 2-0 win in Scotland, in Glasgow. And Poland, perhaps surprisingly, beaten by Slovakia, who topped the section tonight ahead of Poland, ahead of Sweden and ahead of Spain.
Three games to react to and a couple to preview as well. To help us do that is European football expert, let's face it, German football guru Kevin Hatchard. Kevin, great to have you.
Great to be with you guys. It's exciting stuff, isn't it?
Certainly is, especially with arguably the fixture of the group stage, certainly match day one, but maybe the group stage on Tuesday.
Yeah, tremendous to see France taking on Germany, because you've got world-class players in both teams. You've got two World Cup winning coaches. It's going to be fascinating to see who can be the most cohesive unit out of those two.
If you want to get in touch with the show, use the hashtag EuroShow on Facebook, Twitter and Instagram as well. And we're asking you for your favourite ever Euro goals for a very obvious reason. In Group D on Monday, the Czech Republic enjoyed a winning start to their campaign. Patrick Schick scored two wonderful goals to see off Scotland at Hampden Park in Glasgow.
Now it's so foul, so many options in the middle. Heartbreaker for Scotland. Schick with the goal. Now it's Schick from range. Oh, it is a thrilling goal. It is one of the great Euro goals. It's Patrick Schick. Unbelievable. To make it 2-0.
Well, Schick's goal has caught everyone's eye from near the halfway line. Magnus on Twitter saying, even Xabi Alonso would have been proud of that one. Vave says, outrageous goal. And Vera Bracken says, Patrick Schick, take a bow. What a goal. Chris, it's what everyone's talking about.
Yeah, and quite rightly so. We have seen history today. His second goal at Hampden from near the halfway line was measured at 45.4 metres, the furthest distance from which a goal has been scored at a Euro since they started measuring that in 1980. And, you know, that stat doesn't really tell the story. It was a magnificent goal, a piece of instinct, but also, as we'll hear in a moment, actually, I think it was maybe more planned than people thought at the time. And the way that basically Scotland were on the attack, they had a shot which was charged down and the ball fell to Schick just over halfway. And he didn't just look up and smash it. He beautifully curled it beyond David Marshall and into the back of the net. And if you see the angle from above and behind, you see where it starts and where it finishes. It's an extraordinary strike. And I genuinely think, and not just because it happened today and it's fresh in the mind, I really do think it is right up there with one of the greatest ever goals scored at a Euro.
Well, let's put Kev on the spot. Kev, what other great Euro goals come to mind then? The Schick strike went into that category.
John Jensen's in the final for Denmark against the Germans, because not only had he tried and tried again in the tournament earlier on without success, but he absolutely nailed it in the final on the biggest stage, slammed it from range. It was a perfect strike, one that he'll remember forever. So that was a terrific goal.
Look, I genuinely think it's very difficult still to look past Marco van Basten for probably the greatest goal at Euro, given it was in a final, given it was from that impossible angle. And if anyone listening hasn't seen it, do go to UEFA.tv or Euro2020.com and try and find it, because it was an exceptional volley which helped the Netherlands win it in 1988. If I look back to Euro 96 and I think of Davor Šuker's chip over Peter Schmeichel in Sheffield, that was an extraordinary moment. And I guess also, Rob, 5 years ago, Jerdan Shaqiri, that acrobatic effort for Switzerland, was, you know, those goals when you are a bit speechless, and then for the next hour or 2 hours, the only thing you can think about is just how good that goal was.
All those goals are like sort of quite unique, aren't they? Yeah. We do see long-range belters, but all of those have got that X factor that you really want to see. The Czech fans, of course, went absolutely crazy when that Šik halfway line goal went in. It was roughly 50 metres, wasn't it? The distance from which he scored. And our Czech reporter, Ondřej Zlamal, was at Hampden Park for us. Hello, Ondřej. Welcome to the show.
Hello from Glasgow.
What a victory for the Czechs, and what a goal from Patrik Šik. What was it like to be there in the flesh to see one of the greatest Euro goals of all time?
It was a fantastic feeling. I had a chance to talk to Patrik Šik straight away, like 2 minutes or 5 minutes after the full time. He was happy. He was describing his effort, and he was like enjoying the evening. And he told me about his goal, that it was not a sudden decision about shooting from such a long distance. He noticed during the first half that the goalkeeper is playing very high, and he just saw that probably there could be a chance if Czechs win the ball on high pressing, that there would be a situation where this could be applied. And it really happened, and he just went for the thing he planned, and the ball was just perfect. It couldn't have been any better. I asked him how he felt when the ball fell into the net, and he said it was such a good feeling. It was perfect feeling. I had to run all the way to the group of Czech fans to share the joy with them, because it was simply perfect. Plus, it decided the match, the second goal that helped the Czechs out of the pressure for the equaliser.
I bet. I think there are almost 10,000 fans inside Hampden Park. What was the reaction like in the stadium from them, and also from your fellow journalists that were there? I imagine not many could believe what they'd just seen.
Well, for me, I remember the best goals of the Czech history of football, like Karel Poborský lob in 1996, where it was went very high over Baja, and also Panenka's converted penalty in 1976. You don't have a luck, you know, to be at the stadium and see such a great goal like Šik's one. And I immediately thought that this will be talked about for many, many years after that. Some of the players also, teammates, said that Šik will be popular in all the world for 14 days. And Tomáš Souček, the West Ham midfielder, added that the best goal of the tournament is already decided. So just there's no need to try to score a more spectacular goal than this one, because you cannot beat it. Actually, I remember during the last friendly before the tournament, when Czech Republic played against Albania, Patrik Šik went for that long distance shot from almost half line, and he missed by miles, and the fans were disappointed. Like, you know, that was the disappointment size, like, what is he doing? Now we know, everybody will know what he was trying to do, and he did it perfectly. I also spoke to Patrik about the first goal, which was more like a team goal. It was a practice action. He said that when Coufal got the perfect pass from Darida, that he knew that then the cross will be perfect, and he went after it immediately. And the first goal was also appreciated, and it was also very precious for the Czech side.
And Ondřej, there was pressure on the Czech Republic going into this one. Scotland had a favourable result as well against the Czech Republic in the not-too-distant past. How big was that win in this group stage campaign?
You know, this is a tough group. You have to play England, you have to play Croatia, and the Czechs were relieved, because they knew that they played like the decisive game straight away in the first game, because it could be a decisive game for the whole group. That's why they wanted to show their best football. They were very well prepared. The experience you mentioned against Scotland also helped, because they knew how to play. They didn't allow Scotland the space space and chances, and they were a bit lucky because also Scotland could have scored the opening goal, which was probably the key factor. And the coach also said that the early pressure they survived was very, very important for the win.
Andre, I'm sure it was a special moment to be at. Thank you very much for joining us on the show. It was great to see you get in the camp and get that reaction for us.
Thank you very much.
UEFA's Czech Republic reporter Andre Zlamal there. Great to get his insight and great to hear those thoughts from Patrick Schick, who, by the way, was so keen to praise goalkeeper Vacilic, who made some key saves. Kev Hatchard, you saw the game as well. How did the Czechs go about getting that victory?
Well, all of the focus, quite rightly, will be on Patrick Schick for that incredible brace and that wonderful goal. But they had other heroes. You've just mentioned one of them. I thought the goalkeeper, Vacilic, was fantastic. There was one save he made that came off his own defender and the ball's looping back towards goal. And not only is he having to scramble back towards goal, he has to contort his body somehow to try and pull that ball away. That was a vital save. There were others as well. I thought Tomáš Souček did a brilliant job. We're used to seeing him being quite an attacking midfielder, a box-to-box player, but he just sat in midfield and stopped John McGinn, who's so important for Scotland playing. He just stopped him, stopped his rhythm, disrupted him at every opportunity. That said, I actually thought Scotland played pretty well. I think they'll be disappointed with the nature of the first goal, the way they defended the second phase of the set play. But in general, I think there are positives for Steve Clarke to take.
Kevin, I saw a stat that the Czech Republic blocked 11 of Scotland's 19 shots.
That's crazy, isn't it?
Yeah, it did feel like that every time Scotland had a sniff, apart from the one that hit the bar, which was unfortunate, there was a Czech player there really putting their body on the line. And I guess Vladimír Šufal kind of embodied that, because he for me was incredibly impressive from right back.
Yeah, they were very well organised. We knew they would be. We know how competitive they are. But it was about whether they could find the magic. And you felt going into this tournament that was always going to be the key for them. And Patrick Schick is a player that we know, having seen him in the Bundesliga for Bayer Leverkusen and for Leipzig, having seen what he's done in Italian football as well, there are moments in games where he can come alive. And I don't think maybe he's been as consistent as he would have personally liked to have been this season. He's capable of getting even more goals, but in that second goal we see the genius, we see the technique, and we see the confidence, because there are lots and lots of players that wouldn't have the daring, the audacity to even try that lob from range.
As Kevin also mentioned there, Scotland did have chances. Andy Robertson, who I do think was exceptional throughout, nearly scored first half, denied by a fine save. He was whipping in crosses into the middle, but Scotland could not take their chances. Their first appearance at a major finals in 23 years, let's not forget. We'll hear from Manchester United midfielder Scott McTominay in a moment, but first here's their manager, Scotland's manager, Steve Clarke.
I think the brakes went against us at the wrong time. Obviously, losing a goal just 5 minutes before half-time from a second phase off a set play was disappointing for us. We normally defend that quite well. So that was a blow. We came out second half, we tried to get back in it. Jack hit the bar, and then Jack had another shot that got blocked, fell straight to their striker, and he produced a marvellous finish. And from there becomes a long afternoon, a difficult afternoon. I thought we showed good invention. We had chances to get back in the game. If we could have made the 2-1, then it can be a different ending to the afternoon. So disappointed, but ready for the next one. Listen, we didn't come here for a learning experience, but obviously if we have to learn lessons from it, that's what we'll do. We came here to be competitive. I think we were competitive in the game.
I would say disappointment. I would say unlucky. I'd say disappointed. Words like that to describe the game. I felt like we did more than enough to be in a state of the game where we was competing. And the second goal is the one that hurts us. That's the one that is really the sucker punch. But as I say, you haven't to give up, and you need to go for that next goal. And we had enough opportunities to get it today, and we never. And it's something that we've got to look at. If you don't score, you're not efficient in front of goal, and we weren't today. And we had more than enough opportunities, myself included. And it's something we have to put right. We have to put right as soon as possible. And we'll be looking at doing that from the videos and the analysis that we'll watch. And hopefully we can. As a player, you should be used to big games. It's not anything new to see fans in the stadium. Obviously, whenever we're going into games like this, just more calm, more stable and stuff like that. So whenever we do get opportunities to score in front of goal, we have to take them. And I'm sure it's something that we'll be looking at on Friday.
Yeah, McTominay echoing the thoughts of Clark that on the day, the Czech Republic were more clinical. Of course, we did see Jack Hendry as well hit the crossbar from range of one at one point. But there was big news before kickoff, really, in that Kieran Tierney couldn't play. Chris, how big a factor was that?
I think it was huge. Don't underestimate Andy Robertson, rightly, as the captain and the leader, gets a lot of press in Scotland and around the world. I think, you know, they have two absolute world-class players and Kieran Tierney is the other one. And that access, Tierney plays as one of the three defenders, the centre-halves on the left-hand side, and Robertson as the left wing-back. They combined so very, very well. And the first goal came from that area where, you know, Soufal's ball was whipped in and it was a great header from Schick. And you just wonder, had Kieran Tierney been on the pitch, it's ifs and buts, but would that have been different? The good news for Scotland is that Steve Clark said it's only a little niggle, and he's hoping that he will be fit for Friday at Wembley when, of course, Scotland take on their old foes, their old rivals, England.
Of course, it was disappointment for the Scotland fans by full time. Flo Lloyd Hughes was at the UEFA Football Village in London.
I'm here with Liam, Scotland fan, who obviously watched the game earlier. Thoughts about the result? It's a tough one. How are you feeling? Are you still feeling confident?
We didn't play that badly. I can't really complain. We didn't take our chances. That's the difference in the game. So, confident, no. We're probably going out. But at least we turned up. It wasn't neat, which is the big worry.
I guess the good thing is you can still get out of the group. Third place team can go through. So
yeah, just the issues you've got to beat. You've got to take something against England on Friday.
Nah.
And let's not kid ourselves. History doesn't look well upon us at Wembley. Playing like that. So
I feel like, though, if there's one thing Scotland want to do, it's spoil the party, right?
Yeah, and I think that's the thing. If we got a result today, you could have played for the draw. But no, look, we can go. We've got players there that can win the game. Like, we need John McGinn to do more in midfield. Like, he didn't play badly, just didn't get a chance to play well today. You know, we've got some good players out there. Just, I've got to take the chances and hope.
And where are you going to be watching the next two games?
I'm actually escaping London for the England game. But
I'm going to Wembley.
Wembley.
Well, I think they're going to have a lot of fun on their day out at Wembley. The Czech Republic and England on 3 points apiece. Croatia and Scotland yet to get off the mark. OK, let's move on to Group E, which got up and running on Monday. Spain kicked off their campaign with a goalless draw against Sweden in Seville. Chris Parrott and Kevin Hatcher with me, Rob Daly. Kevin, Spain frustrated ultimately. They had so much of the ball. Why couldn't they find a way through, do you think?
They didn't take the big chances when those big chances arrived, and there's been a big debate in Spain as to who should play in the central striking role. Should it have been Alvaro Morata, who did start the game? Should it be Gerard Moreno, who's had a fantastic season with Villarreal, not only in La Liga, but also winning the UEFA Europa League? He has been sensational, but it was Morata who got the nod, and he had two of the biggest chances. Missed the target with both of those. The best one really was the first opportunity. And again, it goes back to what we said about Scotland. It's about taking your chances when they arrive. There was a lot to like about Spain's performance. I thought Pedri was absolutely sensational in midfield at times. He's got such vision, such balance, and they did create chances. But there was a certain vulnerability on the counter, and Sweden did make a couple of decent chances. And Alexander Isak, who's had an amazing season with Real Sociedad in La Liga, 17 goals in the Spanish top flight this season. He had an effort diverted onto the post by Marcos Llorente, which was a fantastic piece of defending. And he also picked out Marcus Berg at the far post, and Berg couldn't quite turn it home.
Yeah, I mean, this could easily have been 2-2, I think. Robin Olsen had a very, very fine game in net for Sweden. Kevin Hatchard, some of these stats coming out of this match are quite extraordinary, though. Passes completed, Spain 849, Sweden 106.
But these are, I mean, that is quite the goal.
Yeah, I mean, this. I mean, look, these are two nations with, you know, long and proud philosophies, right? And we saw it. Spain like to pass the ball. Sweden are far more happy to be 4-4-2 and to be hard and compact. And that was the way it transpired. And Sweden will be absolutely delighted. And we mentioned the goalkeeper, but also the centre-halves from Sweden, Kevin, had very, very good nights.
Yeah, they did. And it's interesting what you say about the stylistic battle between these two. Because I actually think what Luis Enrique is trying to do with Spain is he's trying to make tiki-taka supercharged, if you like. So he wants to play higher up the pitch. He wants to have that rhythm. He wants to have that possession, but he wants to move the ball even more quickly. And he wants to make them squeeze the opposition as much as they can. As you say, Sweden defended incredibly well on the night, but did pose a threat on the counter. I think the worry for Spain going forward and the thing he's going to have to look at, Luis Enrique, is the defending in transition, because there are teams that Spain will come up against in this tournament, you would imagine, who will cause them more problems in transition and will have more, even more pace in behind. So I think that's a concern for him going forward, but some good stuff as well.
Let's hear from one of the key men behind Sweden keeping out Spain, their central defender and the star of the match, Victor Lindelof.
Yeah, no, I mean, it was a very difficult game. We knew that we played against a very strong opponent, and for us to get a draw today was, it felt amazing. So, yeah, good day. He saved us a couple of times today, so I think he deserves this as much as me today. So, I mean, he was absolutely brilliant today. I mean, I think they're proud of us today. I think they saw what an effort we put in, so I think they're proud of us. Obviously, you always want to win games, but we played against a very strong team today, so a draw for us was a good result.
And Spain did manage to carve out some late opportunities in the match. Gerard Moreno with a header, kept out by a brilliant save by goalkeeper Robin Olsen. And there was a chance for Sarabia as well, 4 minutes into added time after great work between Pedro and Jordi Alba down the left-hand side to whip it into the middle. Do you think Spain will be concerned here, Chris? I think probably on paper, would you argue Sweden are the next strongest team in the group? It's tough when Poland have got Lewandowski, but you look at the fact they were also in the same qualifying section, Spain and Sweden. Spain just pipping them to top spot there.
Yeah, possibly. I mean, it's Slovakia who, as we'll get onto it now, currently top group E after the first matches. I think what we just heard from him there, I think Victor Lindelof proves exactly what his coach Jarno Andersson said pre-match, that he has one of the best centre-halves in world football in his ranks. And I think perhaps that has been missed by some when you look at the superstars at Euro 2020, how many people had Victor Lindelof in it. But he's a guy who plays week in, week out for one of the biggest clubs in the world and played in the European final. And he is central to that solid base that Sweden have. And we said this, didn't we, in the preview podcast. They are always very, very hard to beat. And that always makes Sweden a very dangerous tournament team. And from their point of view, they will think, well, hang on, we've gone to supposedly the best team in this section, away from home in Seville as well, and we've already picked up a point, and that sets them up really, really well in this section.
By the way, after 15 minutes, Sweden have played 23 passes, Spain have played 173. There's loads of stats like that, but there's more than one bridge to Manhattan. Sweden managed to get themselves the draw by playing solid and being really effective on the counter-attack against Spain. OK, let's go to the other game in Group E. Slovakia shot Poland to beat them 2-1 at St. Petersburg Stadium. Only their second ever Euro victory. Here's how they did it.
Away from Berezinski. This is brilliant from Mack. And he squeezed his shot in! All his own work! And by Zielinski. Ribas, Linetti! It's taken seconds at the start of the second half.
Pekarik.
Card is out and will be followed by the first red of Euro 2020 for Poland's Gregors Krychowiak. In by Mack. Oh, what a hit! What a hit for Slovakia from Milan Skriniar!
And that result came after there was some concern from Slovakia. They had drawn with Cyprus in Malta in March, but that was a huge win to start their campaign against Poland. Straight after the game, we spoke to our man who's covering Slovakia in Euro 2020, Rasto Ribic.
Thank you, and saying hello to everybody.
There must be an immense amount of pride in Slovakia for the national team's win over Poland. Poland were the favourites going into this game.
Yes, we are proud. All of us, we are proud because nobody expects such a result. Maybe coach Stefan Tarkovic expect, but nobody, because Poland was a huge favorite.
Were there many Slovakia supporters in the stadium?
Not so much, but maybe, I don't know how many, maybe 5,000. I'm not so sure about the numbers, but I heard them. There were also some Slovak drama and some Slovak fans and chanting also Slovak songs. I heard them, which is great.
What did you expect going into this tournament, Rasto?
To be honest, we have a problem. Slovakia has a problem to create a chance to score goals. We just beat only Russia this year. And we also problem last year because Slovakia had not beaten any opponent in the last year, just in the extra time or after the penalties. So nobody expected such a result. Coach Stefan Tarkovic said in the press conference, it's still not over because it's just one game. We need more points to advance for the group. But Slovakia have been played 5 years ago also for the European Championship and also advanced for the group from the third place. But now there's a real and huge chance to continue something like this.
And of course, Marek Hamšík was playing again today. Can you put into words just how important a figure he is in Slovakian football?
Yeah, he's a hero for Slovakia, but he didn't play so much and so many times, so many games before he has a muscle injury. He was still not fit maybe 3 days before the game, but everything went well for him. He's a real captain with 127 starts for Slovakia.
And Rasto, can you tell us about the celebrations at full-time on the pitch and in the stands with the supporters? Because those were brilliant celebrations amongst the players.
I have been doing just a flash interview with the player. I can see just celebration of the players, but they went to celebrate also with the fans. And there was a lot of fun, a lot of smiling. It's really nice to see moments like this.
And who have you had the chance to speak to after this famous win for Slovakia?
I've been speaking also with Ondrej Duda and Milan Škriňa, who was the name star of the match. Also with coach Stefan Tarkovic. The last one was Robert Bank. He plays also really, really good. His cheeky breakthrough, which helped us to score the first one, was fantastic.
Well, Rasto, thank you very much for joining us and enjoy the rest of the evening in St. Petersburg.
Thank you. All the best to you.
UEFA's Slovakia correspondent Rasto Ribic there after a brilliant win for them. Played without a striker, used Marek Hamšík and Ondrej Duda effectively as two kind of full strikers up there. And it worked out for them. Kevin Hatcher with us. Kevin, I suppose part of the issue for Poland was, and it was a lot of the speculation before, how do you supply Robert Lewandowski in this team? And I think he had one notable chance maybe. They couldn't quite do that.
No, they couldn't. And the chance that he did have was a very tough one. He was coming through traffic onto a ball that had been played in brilliantly into the penalty area, but it was always going to be tough to nod that one on target. And I thought Slovakia were, from back to front, fantastic. And you mentioned Ondrej Duda, and I've seen him a lot for Köln in the Bundesliga, play in that kind of false nine role, if you like. He's not a recognised centre forward. He would never pretend to be a recognised centre forward, but he's so clever with his movement. He's so technically sound. He's got a superb left-footed volley late in the Bundesliga season for Köln as they stayed up. And he was really intelligent in the way he linked with other players. Robert Mack, he had the run that led to the own goal. But they put in so much work in midfield and defence as well. Kutzka, I thought, was brilliant at the heart of midfield. And they just made it really tough for Poland to get any kind of momentum. Zielinski couldn't get going. It was a super performance. It really was.
It was. And Kevin, we didn't see a goal for Robert Lewandowski, but we saw a sort of Lewandowski-type finish, but from a centre-back, Emilian Skriniar. That was one of the goals of the day, right?
What a hit. Unbelievable technique. He put everything into it, and it was some celebration as well. And he was Herculean at the back for them. He led by example in that area. We know what a good season he's had for Inter in Serie A. Winning the Scudetto, he's been a big part of that. And they kind of took their cues from him defensively, and what a way to win it.
Yeah, what a way to win it. Saw a great little stat. Milan Skriniar went his first 37 games for Slovakia, gents, without scoring. He now has three in his last four.
He's basically a striker, then, isn't he?
Yeah, absolutely.
Peaked at the right time.
Peaked at the right time.
Yeah. Brilliant stuff. A brilliant goal from Milan Skriniar. And loads of you are getting in touch about great Euro goals because of course, the strike from Patrick Schick. Everyone is obsessed with his effort from earlier in the day. Oras says, give him the award for goal of the tournament right now. Can't see anyone topping that. And Sharif says, that's one of the best goals I've ever seen. Absolute madness. Keep your tweets coming in. Hashtag Euro show. Lots of our listeners as well play fantasy football on Euro2020.com and on the app as well. This is where we try and give you some team news from around the other camps, not involved in the Monday and Tuesday games, but there actually isn't that much breaking news really, Chris. Some coming from the Italian national team though.
Yeah, of course, because Italy are in action in a couple of days' time actually when they host Switzerland on Wednesday. Unfortunately, Alessandro Florenzi missed training today and won't be available against Switzerland for that match. Marco Verratti remains a doubt. Of course, Italy were so impressive in their victory on opening night against Turkey, and they will be hoping to make it back-to-back wins. And if they do that, I mean, I think mathematically they could potentially be through to the last 16 already. So they're going to have to probably, almost certainly do it without Alessandro Florenzi, though, who came off at half-time during that win against Turkey.
It's just a reminder as well how quickly the next round of games come around. Italy back in action, felt like the opening ceremony 5 minutes ago. By the way, Patrick Schick, if you had him in your team today, I did not. I had Robert Lewandowski. Patrick Schick, 11 points for his brace against Scotland. OK, coming up, match days at Euro won't get much better than this. We're going to focus on the group of death.
You're listening to the official Euro 2020 podcast in association with Qatar Airways.
So sadly, no 3 o'clock. you get so used to having all this football on all the time, but there is no 3 o'clock Central European summertime game at Euro tomorrow, but two absolute belters from Group F, Chris.
I was going to say, there's only two matches tomorrow, but I mean, just the magnitude of them, it's basically like having three or four, isn't it, let's be honest. So it starts, it's all about Group F, the final group. They've had to watch and wait and see everybody else perform, and now they get their chance. The section, really, let's be honest, it's going to be fantastic to see who goes through. So at the Puskás Arena in Budapest, in front of hopefully a huge crowd, the biggest of this European Championship so far, Hungary host the holders, Portugal. And then the small matter of the final group stage match of this match day one, France against Germany in Munich. Wow. I mean, look, that is two World Cup winners, very, very recent, two of the best teams, the best squads in this whole competition, and they face off for them on opening night. Cannot wait.
Yeah, well, let's get some reaction to this game on Tuesday. Their goalkeeper and captain, Hugo Lloris, played in the final in 2016 when France lost to Portugal, of course. He admits pressure is high for his nation to perform.
The group stage will be difficult for France. Obviously, there is a lot of expectation around the French national team, but to start against Germany, it's already a big task, but there will be plenty of quality in both sides, and for sure, it will be a big game to play. Yeah, it's always important to have a good start in any tournament. Even more, when you look at our group stage, we are focused on our target, and it's clear we really need the 3 points to start well the competition. So we're gonna do everything to get the win against a tough opponent.
World Cup winning captain Hugo Lloris there. Kevin Hatcher with us to help preview this one. Kev, we cannot wait for this game. First of all, there is a bit of overlap because we've got a game at Bayern Stadium and there are players from both clubs in the camps, respectively.
Yeah, there are. And you look at, for example, the fullbacks for France and what an important job they will do. Benjamin Pavard and Luca Hernandez, we know how good they were at the World Cup. And they are still really important for this France team. And I feel like this is so critical for both of these teams, because for Germany, there are still debates, there are still questions. The 3-4-3 formation that they are likely to use is still relatively new for them. They have had some games where things haven't gone well. For example, they lost 6-0 to Spain. They were beaten at home by North Macedonia in World Cup qualifying. So there are questions for them to answer, and they're very keen to answer those as well. And for the French, they are the favourites. There's no question about that. Everybody's talking about that. You look at the squad, they should be favourites. But that comes with its own pressure. So they are really keen to make a strong start. And that's why this is so fascinating, not least because you've got consistent winners on both teams.
And one of those, of course, is Leon Goretzka, who I think we thought was probably definitely out of this match. But the news today, Kevin, might suggest that he could potentially still play a part.
Yeah, not likely to start, but it's possible that he will play a substitute role. I think the ideal scenario would probably be that they don't involve him in the first game because he's going to be a really important player for them in the grand scheme of things. Mm. This obviously is a critical game, but what they would like is a scenario where he is not needed in this game, because if he does need to come on, then maybe it's not going as well as Germany would like.
And the right back, or I should say, right wing back position really in this system, has that sort of solution been found, Kev?
Yeah, I think so. They've asked Joshua Kimmich, who prefers to play in central midfield, to play this right wing back role. And he is the best right wing back they have. And I think he's one of the best in that position in the world. I mean, he is so, so good that he can play in multiple positions. And what you still get with him being at right wing back, you still get that incredible will to win. You still get that technical ability where he can link and he can get involved in attacks. And what you'll find, guys, is that he will move in from that right wing back slot, and he will move in more centrally and join in with the attack as well. So I'm excited to see if he plays there, and if indeed he does play there, how well he'll do, because I think he is a sensational player.
And how do you think France are going to set up? Because, of course, they have Karim Benzema back. We expect, right, it's going to be that front three of Griezmann and Mbappe and Benzema. And on paper, I wonder if we've ever seen a more potent attacking lineup in Euro history. I mean, that is three of the elite strikers all in the same team, isn't it?
Well, they can hurt you in so many ways, because you've got Griezmann, who can drop between the lines and pick up pockets of space and do damage from there, whether it's strikes from range like the recent one he got against Wales, or whether he can slip somebody in. Karim Benzema, sensational in the UEFA Champions League, year in, year out, has been superb for Real Madrid. I think he's really evolved. I think he's really added to his game. I think he's taken on more responsibility. And then Kylian Mbappe, so explosive, can play in those half spaces, can also run in behind, and that's a real worry for Germany, I think, players running in behind that defensive line. So they can hurt you in lots of different ways. It's interesting, Deschamps has used a midfield diamond at times in the build-up to this, so he does have a bit of tactical flexibility as well.
More on France shortly. Let's go back to Germany, and to help us look ahead further from their perspective is UEFA's Philipp Rüber. He's in Munich for us, Chris.
He is, absolutely, and we wanted to know what the city is like and how the German players are thinking ahead of this huge game, Philipp.
Yeah, it's a huge match, isn't it? So can't believe like we're finishing off match day one like this with what is probably a game that could be a final as well. Yeah, I was in Munich today around the stadium. Weather is awesome, should be again tomorrow. I think we're going to be in for a treat.
Philip, we didn't see many fans. I don't think we saw any actually in the Bundesliga at the back end of the season. We did in the Premier League. So is it going to be jarring, a little surprising, a little unusual to see supporters at the Fußball Arena München?
I think it should be great. I asked Joachim Löw today whether that home advantage could really help. And he said, yes, three matches in Munich. They want to make that venue their living room for this group stage. I saw that there was a fan choreography planned on both sides today. So I'm not sure what the proportion of fans is going to be like tomorrow. But probably they're going to lean more towards Germany. It should be great to have this atmosphere added to such a special match.
You've been around the camp for a while. I know you've spoken to lots of the players. What is the atmosphere like? Because for once, it seems like Germany are coming into a Euro not necessarily as one of the absolute favourites to go all the way and win it.
That's true. In the public, and also here in Germany, many people feel like this German team, they might not be, you know, among the top favorites. But I think within the team, the last 2 weeks, they've done a lot of good. They've gotten so much work in. The camp that they're in is almost like the one that they built in Brazil, the camp, the famous, infamous Campo Bahia, that was instrumental to them winning the title in 2014. They have that kind of a similar spirit, it feels like. And I think the players are more confident than the fans.
And how much of that is down to the return of Thomas Müller. He does seem to be the joker in the group. Obviously, he has this nickname, Radio Müller, because he's always talking during training sessions and the like. But how important has his return been to that kind of atmosphere, do you think, Philip?
He brings the winning spirit. I mean, he's had a great season for Bayern. Maybe he was of highest value for Bayern that he's ever been in his career. And he brings the winning spirit. And he says that publicly as well. Like, he always trying to win matches in training. And he's always, you know, when they're on the basketball court in their camp and stuff, he's always just trying to win and push. And I think many of the younger players are going to benefit greatly from his experience and, as I said, that winning spirit.
What's the attitude amongst the Germany supporters and perhaps the players that you've spoken to about this group that they've been drawn into with Portugal, with France and with Hungary?
Yeah, the group of death, as we say here in Germany. It's split. I mean, some people believe that maybe in the third game, you know, that could be decisive how many goals you score. Those are probably the fans that are a little bit more pessimistic about the first two matches. But it all depends on how they start things against France. And if they, you know, build on their confidence level there, then who knows? I'm kind of expecting them to finish top two in this group.
Philip, thank you very much. That was brilliant. And we hope that you enjoy the match tomorrow. It really is going to be an absolute cracker, isn't it? You're one of the lucky few who are going to be in Munich watching France against Germany. Can we ask for a score prediction, actually, or is that too cheeky?
The last score prediction was Ross White, so I'm going to predict a 1-1 draw.
Philip, well done. Let's see. You're very lucky. I'm very jealous. I'm very jealous. That is going to be an absolute cracker game. Although I will brag here, Chris, if I'm allowed.
Of course.
I was at the 2016 semi-final between the two nations in Marseille.
In Marseille.
And it was a brilliant game, actually, because Germany were actually, especially Bastian Schweinsteiger, a brilliant first half. And then France just turned it round. And if you remember, of course, that was when Antoine Griezmann was properly announcing himself on the international stage.
You know,
he got his goals.
I remember back in the office, we had to work extra late that night whilst you were swanning around in Marseille enjoying yourself.
Oh, do you know, it was beautiful weather. As well.
I bet it was.
It was absolutely baking. Let's get on to France in a moment, actually. Actually, yeah, Kev, what we've got you here. So you're saying three-man attack for Germany, yeah?
I think so, yeah.
So who plays? What do they do? Because actually it's not dissimilar to the issue that Chelsea had going into the Champions League final, is it? Because two of them are in the German national team in Havertz and Werner.
The suspicion is that he will go with Havertz, he will go with Gnabry, and he will go with Thomas Müller. And I think Müller has to start because you just look at his numbers in the last couple of seasons for Bayern. 19 goals and 39 assists in the Bundesliga across the last two seasons. They're mind-boggling numbers. And the thing about him, the Radio Müller thing is relevant beyond the training sessions and beyond just the kind of general hilarity that he generates, because he is a coach on the field. You know, he will lead the press. He will tell people where they're supposed to be. He will talk to the referee the whole time. He is very, very important as a competitor. And when you've got a guy like him and a guy like Kimmich, who are kind of snarling and getting the other players going, and that's snarling in a positive way because they're so determined to win, it makes a massive difference. Havertz, by the way, has made a real impact, I think, not only in training, but in some of the games he's played. We saw him score that winner in the UEFA Champions League final, and I think he's really played his way maybe into the starting lineup in the last couple of weeks.
Kevin, we just heard from Philip there about how happy the camp is and how positive they are. When you look at that Germany squad on paper, it's so, so strong. Do you think as a group that they absolutely believe they can win this tournament? Because I think if you ask most people, you know, they might not include them in their list of the two or three favourites at
Germany
this moment.
Always believe, don't they? I mean, this is even when the squad's not the strongest, Kev, do you not think?
Yeah, I think that's fair. And I think there's a lot of winners in there still. I mean, it's not the same squad, obviously, that won the World Cup, but there are players that did. And there is that core there and there is that belief there. The issue they have had in recent years is this kind of battle between win now and build for the future. And what you've ended up with is quite a problematic development. And that's natural. That's going to happen when you're trying to move between eras and when you're trying to build on previous successes. But obviously the dynamic has now changed because we know that Joachim Löw is bowing out after this tournament and Hansi Flick will replace him. So that has kind of tipped us towards the win now element for this tournament.
Jonas Hofmann is injured for Germany and will not feature, but it's unlikely the Gladbach man would have started anyway. From a France point of view, Didier Deschamps borderline boasting in his press conference ahead of this one. I have all 26 of my players available.
And Why wouldn't he?
They're all pretty good. The only doubts, and we talked about it yesterday on the show, Chris, Benzema and Griezmann recovering from minor issues. Both were involved in training at the Fußball Arena München on Monday. Kev, in terms of the way the Germany defence is set up and what Deschamps is saying about his forwards, he was obviously full of praise for Germany's attacking options, but he was asked about his front three and he said, look, you may see Antoine Griezmann pop up in midfield on the left wing as centre forward. I give my forwards freedom. Is that reason for Germany to be even more concerned, do you think?
Massively, because I think the concern for Germany has been, certainly defensively, that as a team, they have given away too many preventable goals, too many cheap goals. And while the defenders are excellent individually, nobody could argue with the way Antonio Rudiger's played for Chelsea under Thomas Tuchel. Nobody could argue with Matthias Ginter in terms of his consistency, in terms of what he gives to that Germany team physically, and indeed in terms of the pure will to win. And you couldn't argue with Mats Hummels' quality and experience either. But as a unit, does it work? And can Kylian Mbappe run in behind them and cause a problem? And if you look at the possible midfield, Ilkay Gundogan and Toni Kroos, for me, neither of those guys is particularly defensive. They're guys that want to move the ball. They're guys that are extremely accurate passers. But could Griezmann get off the back of both of those and find spaces in between the lines? Yes, I think he can.
The way you're talking there, Kevin, you've got me even more excited, A, about the game. And I just wondered, do you think that Germany might be quite offensive, and therefore do you think this could be quite an open game? We have been used to seeing France sometimes being quite hard to beat and winning games 1-0, 2-0. Do you think we might get goals in Munich?
I hope so, and I think that's the way for Germany to play, because I don't think Germany can play a containment game. I mean, what they may do is they may sit back and try and counter, but I'm not sure that's the best way to approach it. I think it's a German team that's best when it's on the front foot with all of the world-class talent they've got in attack. You know, you look at Müller, you look at Havertz, you look at Gnabry, you look at the quality they can bring off the bench. So I think that's probably the way to play. France, we know that you've got this incredible balance between all of this attacking talent, and you think, oh, they're going to go and beat teams 5-6-0. And actually, Deschamps is so pragmatic in a positive way because he knows they can squeeze out these results. So it is such a fascinating prospect. It really is.
Certainly is. And of course, we'll have reaction for you on the Euro show as well on Tuesday. We'll get our first glimpse as well of the Euro 2016 winners, Portugal, as they take on Hungary at the Puskas Arena in Budapest. And Cristiano Ronaldo is chasing history. The Juventus man has scored 9 goals at Euros. That's level with Michel Platini, who, by the way, did it all in one edition.
He did.
Of the competition. But through a translator at his press conference today, Ronaldo says there is something that means more to him.
Well, this record, I'm not overwhelmed. It's a good record, but more important than this would be to win back-to-back Euros. The team is quite well. We've been working great since our first training sessions on the 27th. The team is great. We're all ready. And so tomorrow I hope we can start on the right foot. It's important that we start with a victory. The crowd will be on their side. But it's good. It's good to play in front of a crowd. We're going to enjoy this. And the team is, like I said, very ready.
I think the happiest I've ever seen Cristiano Ronaldo is when he lifted this trophy 5 years ago in Paris. Remember, of course, he came off in the final injured and they still managed to get the job done. The man putting that question to Cristiano Ronaldo today is our very own UEFA Portugal reporter, Carlos Machado, who was at the press conference and he joins us here. Hello, Carlos.
Thank you. Thank you for this chance, my friend.
I know you've been speaking to Ronaldo today. What do you sense his mood is, and what is the mood in that Portuguese camp right now?
I believe he came to the press conference just to announce himself that he's here to play for the whole team. I noticed that most of the players, and even Fernando Santos, they spoke about the importance of the us instead of the eye of the or the ego of players. There is so much talk about many things about him, and he as captain came here today to announce that Portugal is totally focused on winning again the trophy and above his records, because he can step after he steps in fifth Euro, first guy. If he scores, first guy scoring in five Euros. So if he score, and also that goal would be his 10th. So it will be huge for him. But he came here today to say that more important is the team. There are some more players winning space in terms of importance. I speak mainly in two, Bruno Fernandes and Ruben Dias. Bruno, because for what he's doing in England, for me, he will be the key player of Portugal's performance on this Euro. Because Ronaldo now plays more as center forward, because team needs to be balanced with Jota and Bernard. And the other player for me, which is also key, is Ruben Dias. He's just 24. He made it in May. I believe everybody saw this season in Manchester City. He's being so much important in terms of leading the team, that I believe that he will surely be the next captain of Portugal after Ronaldo.
Other key players in the group, of course, Carlos, and one of those would have been João Cancelo, who's unavailable after testing positive for COVID-19. He's out of the squad. Scored that brilliant goal against Israel in the friendly coming into this tournament. How much of a loss is he, of course, a teammate of Ruben Dias at Manchester City?
Yeah, it will be a big blow, because not only by the capacity of playing in either flank, also the good link he has with Bernard ahead of him, of course, playing for this season in Manchester City, but also because he's one of the most disruptive players that Portugal have. He can make things happen with the shoot, both foot. He can do many things. He can create problems to a defense. Nelson Semedo, who will play in his place, is also good in the attacking role. He also defends well, but tactically is not the same. And Portugal, I believe, it is in this aspect that loses more without Cancelo. Cancelo is evolved a lot with Guardiola, so he could have brought more options, more attacking options, and more capacity of creating problems to the opponents. Below the other three that I said, Bruno, Ronaldo, Ruben Dias, You can speak about Bernardo, Jota, and him as the most important players of Portugal.
Final one to you, Carlos, in terms of enjoying Budapest and the fact that you're going to have, I think I read, 65,000 in that game at the Puskas Arena on Tuesday. How excited are you, and how many Portuguese fans have you seen around the city?
I've seen a few, a couple of hundreds, but I know that around 4,000 are expected. The venue will be packed of home teams, home fans, of course. So the city looks amazing to entertain, and people are very keen to see the match. I spoke with some people who say that they love their country, but they love also Portugal. They'll want Portugal to qualify. Football is now perhaps one of the main subjects in this city's agenda for these days, yeah.
And Carlos, I've got a yes or no question for you to finish. Do Portugal have to win this game?
Yeah. If Perfect. Portugal doesn't win this game, it could be tricky for them.
Carlos, thank you so much for joining us, and enjoy Budapest.
Thank you for this opportunity, my friend.
And credit to Carlos Machado. We put him on the spot and he delivered an answer, didn't he?
Yeah, he didn't do that. What some players and coaches do, skirt around the issue. What Kevin Hatchard does, sit on the fence.
All right, let's see if Kev stays on the fence with this one. Do you play André Silva? Kev, you've seen a lot of him in the Bundesliga this season. He scored more goals than Erling Haaland, of course.
I would. I don't know where all this sitting on the fence comes from. I'm outraged, quite frankly. I would. I think he is a player that's shown he can score all types of goals. He attacks the ball so well in the air. You can play the ball in front of him down the channels and he'll score. He's a penalty box poacher. I think he's playing as well as he's ever played, quite frankly. I think he feels really settled in the Bundesliga. So I would be tempted to play him at centre forward with Cristiano Ronaldo off the left and maybe either Bernardo Silva or Diogo Jota on the right.
Pick one. Come on, you can't.
Okay, all right. My forward line
is André
Silva through the middle, yeah. Cristiano Ronaldo down the left, and then I think you have Bernardo Silva on the right.
You don't play Diogo Jota?
You bring him on as an impact player.
I think you've got to play.
I mean, how many options has he got?
We talk
about the France squad a lot, and you know the England squad, but the attacking players that Portugal have at their disposal in this summer's tournament is brilliant. And I think, you know, all serious, right? All these coaches, it's great because they've all had long seasons, and after 60 minutes, if you can make those changes, you saw England doing it. That might just be the difference when it comes to the last 16. Well,
who scored? It was Austria, wasn't it? Brought on two players.
Yeah, and they both scored.
Yeah. By the way, we do have, as we mentioned there with Carlos, this phenomenal crowd at the Puskás Arena, a venue actually we've seen a lot of in the Champions League.
Yeah.
It was sort of used as a sort of neutral venue for many of the ties as well. It's worth noting that the Hungarian fans are reportedly planning a huge communal march to the Puskás Arena, which might be quite the sight. 9 of their 26-man squad did play in the 2016 edition of the competition. Chris, what can we expect from them? Because, you know, many people are looking at the group and ignoring Hungary.
Yeah, well, look, I think that is very dangerous and very unfair. This is a country who had a great run in France 5 years ago. I've said before, and I think I will be surprised if they lose all three of their games, which means that, you know, the teams that they pick up points against, that could have a huge say in who goes through in terms of the top two places. And look, just check this out from Marco Rossi, their coach. He was asked whether he's prepared any sort of motivational speech because they're playing the holders and they're in a section with France and Germany. He said, motivation, not a problem. If someone isn't motivated by all of this, they're in the wrong sport.
It's worth noting as well, they came 4th out of 5 teams in their qualifying group, but had to then eventually go through the Nations League playoffs. And that's the beauty of that. We've seen that.
Absolutely.
With North Macedonia, of course. Chris, Kev, it's very handy you're on the show today because Hungary have a plethora of Bundesliga players who are arguably their most important ones too.
Yeah, they do. Starting with the goalkeeper, Peter Gulácsi, who I think has improved massively in the last 2 or 3 years. He's become much more consistent, makes very few errors now. He did have a stage where he would perhaps make a few too many errors from his point of view, but he's really tightened that up. He's much more commanding. In front of him, one of his Leipzig teammates, Willy Orban, who is a real nuts and bolts defender. What I mean by that is he does all of the basics superbly well. He can challenge well on the floor. He can mark his man really well. He attacks the ball superbly in the air. He's a set-piece threat as well. And then at the other end of the pitch, you've got Adam Soloy, who's a big, strong centre-forward, but a very clever player as well. Didn't play as much as he would have liked for Mainz, certainly in the first half of the season, but he helped them turn their season around and stay up when it looked as though they were going to get relegated. And one player I really like is Roland Schalai, who plays for Freiburg. And he has really worked hard on improving the defensive side of his game and making more clever movements on and off the ball. Christian Streich, who's a brilliant coach, the Freiburg boss, has worked ever so hard with Schalai to improve him.
And of course, one man who unfortunately is not playing at Euro 2020, but I think we should bring him up given it's just ahead of Hungary's first match, is Dominik Szoboszlai. I know you've seen a lot of him. How key normally is he for Hungary, and how do they go about filling his position and trying to get his creativity from, I guess, somebody else, or maybe change the way they play so that they are, I don't know, more perhaps of a team than just relying on all of his magic?
Yeah, it's heartbreaking for them and him, because he's the kind of guy who can change a game in an instant. He can hit a long-range drive into the top corner. He can drive past players in midfield. They don't really have a like-for-like replacement, but what they will want guys like Roland Schalai to do is take players on and create space for others, because that's what Szoboszlai is able to do. It was a real shame that we didn't see him play for Leipzig in the second half of the season. I was looking forward to seeing what he could do in the Bundesliga. But they'll have to stay compact. They'll have to stay defensively strong. They're strong on set pieces. They've got Laszlo Kleinheisler, who can score from range. So he is capable of changing a game in an instant as well. But it's going to be about trying to keep Portugal at bay and trying to nick something at the other end.
Two incredible games on Tuesday. A reminder, Monday's results. Scotland 0, the Czech Republic 2. Poland 1, Slovakia 2. Massive win for Slovakia. And it finished goalless in Seville between Spain and Sweden in the other game in Group E. Chris, Tuesday's fixtures. Let's have them again.
Well, that's huge, isn't it? We've just been talking. Hungary against Portugal is the early game. Only two matches on Tuesday, but they're absolute belted. And then that match in Munich, the one that I think most people, since the draw was made a long time ago now, remember, thought, I can't wait for that. It is France against Germany. Now, what is going to happen in that match? They can't both win, and they both do normally win their opening matches. It's going to be sensational, and we are going to be on air shortly after that one has finished. So do not miss the Euro show tomorrow night.
Kevin, who's winning it to finish?
France are going to beat Germany 2-1. Portugal are going to win 1-0.
You said he sits on the fence, Chris. Very hard.
That's because I wanted to draw him out for that prediction. Love it, Kev.
Kev, thank you very much. That's all we have time for now. A reminder, you can listen to us live every match day on the Euro Show, available on the app and on Euro2020.com. And you can subscribe to the podcast via your favourite provider.
Yeah, we'll always review everything that's happened on the night and look ahead to the next set of matches. You'll hear from the best players involved, and we've got reporters in every host city.
Thank you very much for listening. We'll see you next time as we review France versus Germany.
Thanks for listening to the official Euro 2020 podcast in association with Qatar Airways.